The Rockets will try and seal the deal and finish off the Jazz tonight after a back-and-forth three-point win in Game 3 on Saturday. Quicker turnaround for Game 4. It's tonight, obviously, and P.J. Tucker says the Jazz will not quit.
Seen a lot of stuff happen that has never happened. Records being broken, things have been happening. So this team not going to give up. They're going to keep fighting. They're not. It's not in them to give up. They're going to fight all the way to the end. So I think Game 4 is going to be just as tough as Game 3 was.
Is it easier said than done to have that mentality?
It is. It's really tough. And it's something that we keep talking about today already this morning. Staying focused, locking in. Because Game 4, it's going to be just as hard as Game 3, and we know that.
That was courtesy of Mark Berman, Fox 26. The Rockets are favored by 2.5 in this potential closeout Game 4. Will this series end tonight?
It ends tonight, Mike. The Rockets had the appropriate scare put into them. Not that they needed a scare. I think they came out playing with plenty of energy in that game. It's just that Utah had their backs against the wall. They were flying around. They were actually buying into their defensive strategy versus James Harden. The Rockets just absorbed every punch and went out about their business and prevailed in the fourth quarter because they were by far the better basketball team. PJ Tucker at the end, I told you that story the one time about the time I was about to get in a fight in college, and this kid was like up in my face, and I was like trying to talk him down, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Scott, my buddy Scott, came out of like the bushes and cold cocked this dude. Like I was just standing right there, and like Scott came out of nowhere and just cold cocked this dude. Scott was really drunk. PJ Tucker wasn't really drunk, but that's what it felt like at the end. Like out of nowhere, PJ Tucker just shows up with these two rebounds in the last 10 seconds, and just. Like single-handedly out rebounds a much better rebounding team in the Jazz and just sealed the deal. The Rockets look completely poised to compete with any team in the playoffs because even in their worst game, they looked like a better team than a really good defensive team in the Utah Jazz.
I think it ends tonight as well, just because think of the environments in Salt Lake City tonight. People will be excited and, you know, it's obviously a very angry crowd in Utah, but they're waiting for the season to end. Oh. They're waiting for the bad things to happen. And they're going in tonight feeling like, man, Gobert played well, and Mitchell scored 34 points on Saturday. Harden was terrible shooting, and we still lost the game. What's going to happen tonight? This series will end in 4 tonight.
Speaking of the crowd, when Harden went down, and who landed on him? Who rode him underneath the rim that
Royce
time?
Royce O'Neal, I think.
It was O'Neal. O'Neal rode him down. That crowd, the Utah Jazz crowd, who is infamously bad, but remember, there have been a couple fans banned for life in the last couple of years from Utah. PJ Tucker was talking, basically telling one of the fans to shut the hell up, and the fans shut the hell up. It was nice to see. It was like, oh, look at that. You're scared, aren't you, buddy? You're scared you're going to lose privileges for the rest of your life.
I might need to make an ode to PJ Tucker by the end of the week.
Yes.
Because also, he had the rebound at the end of the game, and then you just hear this from PJ Tucker.
That win sums up what we're all about, is winning, period. No matter how you know, we're going to keep playing how we play. We're going to keep taking our same shots, whether we're making or missing. We're going to keep the same energy and do the things that we do. So, to get that win, that was huge.
Does all the little things on the court. He is by far the most likable member of the Houston Rockets. He does the rebounds at the end of the game. He's the kind of guy that you expect to step up for somebody if he's getting pushed around. And he also, I think, is somewhat of a leader because he's saying things like that, whether it's focus on the Jazz who stink in Game 4 tonight, or it's just saying, hey, this is what we're all about. Not about a struggle at the three-point line from James Harden. We're about getting the rebounds at the end of the game and doing the nitty-gritty to win.
I don't know. I don't know like how you just casually drop that he's easily the most likable.
He is.
Now I have to think about that.
It's not debatable.
Gerald Green, Clint Capella. I don't know if P.J. Tucker is the most likable. Text in 713.
He's a Texas guy.
I just need a vote on the text line real quick. 713-572-4610. Who's the most likable Rocket at this
point? Tucker!
Moment?
It's a good question. He's a winning basketball player. If the Rockets go on to win the championship, he will be their Charlie Morton or their Marwin Gonzalez. No question about it. I mean, you cannot win championships without guys like P.J. Tucker. And if they find a way to upset Golden State in the next round of the playoffs, P.J. Tucker will absolutely make 2 to 3 massive plays that you will look back on. Again, Game 4 tonight in Salt Lake City.
I got to know Hartenstein better before I leave him off the list, too.
Well, hopefully not too soon. Yeah. Rangers hold off the Astros 11-10 in a nearly thrilling comeback in Arlington on Sunday as the Stros drop their second straight series against their in-state rival on the road. Kyle McHugh gave up 9 runs in this game. Is there a worry that They have figured out McHugh a little bit.
I'm a little bit nervous about it. I mean, you take a look at the amount of swing and misses that he's been getting in the past, and then you saw what happened in yesterday's game. He threw 65 pitches, just 9 of them generated a swing and miss, and they were all on his sliders. His slider has apparently been getting a 45.6% whiff rate thus far this season, and yeah, it just did not happen. It did not happen in yesterday's game. If you have been throwing one pitch so dominantly for a period of time, it does seem like it's a matter of time before someone catches up on him. It does seem, though, and based off of reading the game yesterday, McHugh was saying, you know, I didn't have the command of my fastball, and that sort of affected the ability of my slider to, I think, fool and bamboozle hitters. But slightly nervous about it. I mean, this Texas Rangers lineup isn't very impressive.
I'm not. Look, they've played more games in Arlington than they have at Minute Maid so far this season. This is an absurd oddity in how frequently they've played the Rangers this early in the year. So when you combine the fact that the batters have seen these guys so much, and McHugh and Gerrit Cole both had off days, I'm not worried about it in the slightest. Now, is there going to be room for competition on down the line? As Forrest Whitley starts to, you know, at some point they're going to bring him up with Peacock, with all these guys. There'll be room for it. But everything else is firing so well right now, and Colin McHugh has been so good for the most part, that this doesn't make me any bit nervous. Plus, the bats were very, very much alive yesterday.
I'm not too worried about Colin McHugh specifically, because this was his only bad start of the five or so that he's made so far this season. But it is something to monitor, because I think that, kind of like 2017, this could be the kind of year where we're talking in mid to late July about, hey, we wanted them to add one big starting pitcher just to finish things off in the rotation. Next headline, draft week finally here for the Texans' biggest week of the offseason, and they enter this week, the Texans do, with a big need at cornerback. GM Brian Gain giving his thoughts on the corners in this draft.
Yeah, I think there's varying portions in this draft where, you know, look, is there a Patrick Peterson, like an elite corner in this draft? You know, maybe not, okay. But what I would say is there's starting caliber players in this draft, both in day one and day two inclusive of the second and third round. And you might be able even to extend that to day four, the early portion of day four. So I think there is a lot of volume. There's guys who have outside skill sets. There's guys who have inside skill sets. And there's a few players in this draft, I think, that offer the versatility to be either or. You know, you've heard me say this before. We're going to try to acquire as much versatility as we can. The best players who are also the most versatile to help save some of those roster spots when they're only dressing 46.
All right, so most of us think that offensive line is the biggest need, or at least the one they'll most likely select first. So this week, what do you want to see them do at the cornerback position that's realistic?
I really want Rockusen. I mean, I watched a little more film of all the other cornerbacks this past weekend. I watched all of Greedy Williams. I watched more of DeAndre Baker. And I sort of came to the conclusion that of all those guys, Baker might be the best pure cover guy. Greedy Williams might be perhaps the best guy in terms of closing speed, but neither of those guys seem like they want any part of tackling. I will say Baker's just not very good at it, but doesn't seem to want much of it. And Greedy Williams, same thing. Rockusen seems like the kind of guy who could slip to the Houston Texans, yeah, just based off of all the entire lack of conversation about him leading up to the draft, Seth, which we talked about last week.
Right, and like, obviously there's a local bias for Greedy Williams because people have seen him play a lot. LSU people love him, and that's all great and understandable. I get nervous about it when I see a guy that people talk about how he'll be great as press man corner because he's got long arms, but I don't necessarily see him have any element of physicality to his game other than grabbing. That makes me a little bit nervous. I think that the Texans will draft an offensive tackle in the first round because their most important objective is to protect Deshaun Watson. And then what I'd really like to see is the next pick needs to be a cornerback. And I wouldn't be opposed to trading up in the second round either to get that cornerback.
Same.
I think that, look, you've accumulated.
I'm good with that.
After last year, look, you didn't have a first and a second round pick last year. Be happy with a first and 1 second round pick, or maybe if you only have to trade a third to move up in the second round, I'd be great with that. I'd be very, very fine with that.
They need to add a cornerback in this draft, most likely in the second round, since I think they're going offensive line at 23, or at least their first pick. They need to add somebody who can compete for a starting job this season. Because right now, if they play the game on Sunday, Jonathan Joseph is one of your starters. not really an ideal situation. Plus, we don't know how good Bradley Roby is going to be this season with his inconsistency. They got to add at least one guy, a corner, who can play for them this season.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, no, okay. Definitely. I mean, and they hope that they've done it already, but I think that finding one of those guys early on, yeah, you're going to have to do it. I would imagine one of those second round picks, you could actually find Rockiesin falling to you, and you don't have to spend a big time pick on Greedy Williams, who, based off of watching everything this past weekend, gets called for a lot of penalties. And I don't know. I was really high on Greedy Williams, and then I watched him this weekend.
Now you're less sold.
Now I'm a little further.
Look, these guys are all, they're all raw, and it's so much harder to play cornerback in the NFL than it is in college. It's really hard to project. It's just they don't allow you to do nearly as much. And that's just where with Greedy Williams, I feel like there's a whole lot more projection. And there is with any of these guys, but Rockiesin is very, very raw, but is showing every little bit that he's willing to work on that rawness. He's only played 1 year of major college football, if you want to call it.
He's got that eye of the tiger.
Yeah.
Mike, Seth, and Paul on a Monday. One of the big stories this weekend across the country was the way Russell Westbrook treats one member of the media, Barry Trammell, who's been around Oklahoma City media for a long time. Now, the Thunder lost last night, and they'll be eliminated by Portland in short order. But they won Game 3 on Friday, and here is the exchange that a ton of people are talking about between Westbrook and Paul George.
Barry Trammell with the Oklahoma. And Russell, the first half, both teams struggled offensively. It was sort of a slug of a game. Both teams got going in the second half. What happened that sort of reversed the tone of this game?
Next question.
Yeah, Russ, the fourth quarter, you got a 15-point lead. They catch up. What happened the last 6, 7, 8 minutes that reversed the momentum and let you guys burst back away?
And then it was basically.
So did he refuse that question too?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The background is Westbrook has gotten pissed at Barry Trammell for whatever reason a few years ago. Trammell always asks him questions, and every single time the last couple of years, Westbrook has responded by saying, next question. Every single time.
Barry Trammell annoys me when he asks a question for some reason. I don't know. There's something about the way he asks a question. He explains too much.
His tone?
Yeah. No, it's not the tone. It's more just like, yeah, you're like.
Too much background?
Yeah. Just ask a question.
Too much background.
I think
Westbrook's a total clown. And here's why he's a total clown. Because Westbrook pulls off this act like he doesn't care what people think about him, except the way that Russell Westbrook comes across is that he is intimately aware of what almost everybody thinks about him.
Uh-huh.
And this is nothing to take away from him as a player, because obviously he's deeply flawed, and he's probably not going to win anything after Kevin Durant leaves, which it is what it is. Maybe he's just not built for that. I don't know. He's going to be a Hall of Famer and all that. But Westbrook has this act like he is above everyone, and yet he is so petty that nobody who actually doesn't care what anybody else thinks acts the way that Westbrook does.
Okay, is he claiming he doesn't care what people think, though?
He did, like, 2 months ago.
Okay, I mean, because that's what I did. Like, that's the same way people say that they don't care what people think of them on social media when they're dying inside.
Yes.
Like, okay, Mike, you've said it various times. You've told, when I can tell you're about to get into it with somebody on Twitter, I'll be like, Mike, why are you doing that? And you'll say, because it's fun. I'm like, no, that's not.
Well, sometimes it is fun.
Yeah, sometimes, but sometimes you're
not
dying inside. I think that Russell Westbrook annoys me in a lot of ways, but I also have just always wondered, all right, if writers are allowed to write their opinion and get facts wrong, because they have, like, before fake news or anything else, like, there's just going to be factual errors. People just get stuff wrong at times, or they report sources that are lying to them. It's not that they're bad writers or anything. I guess, what's wrong with an athlete approaching a writer basically with the same tone that the writer approaches that player when he's doing it in print? And isn't that what we always want anyway? Say it to my face. So, like, if somebody's very critical of Russell Westbrook in an article, like, what's wrong with Westbrook? Now, he should answer the question, I suppose, but what's wrong with Westbrook just being kind of nasty back to that person?
I think being nasty is fine.
Okay.
I think it's okay.
I mean, if Barry Trammell hasn't been fair with his coverage of Russell Westbrook, then fine.
I'm not even saying fair. Like, what if he's been nasty but accurate? But, like, what's wrong with being nasty back to somebody? Like, does the pen give you immunity?
No, I think that the answer there is have a conversation about it and go back and forth. And then the writer, if he's writing that stuff, needs to stand up there and say, listen, I believe what I wrote, and here's why I believe that.
And it's a tricky spot, too, because I think when you're in those settings, I think as a reporter, you're told, don't make a scene. And I wonder how the guys that are there every single day, like, I wonder how Barry Trammell, who deals with this a lot, like, doesn't just say, Russell, you're acting like a child. Like, yeah. you're an absolute child here. I mean, you lost the game. Your thoughts. Like, that's the kind of stuff, like, if I got extremely petty, I would go down that path. Probably wouldn't end well. I would get my credential revoked.
I would pay to see that. But that's
the kind of thing that, like, these guys, like, when you're asking the same question over and over and over again, and you're in the softball market that is Oklahoma City, I mean, yeah. They kiss these guys' asses there.
Well, supposedly Oklahoma City as an organization is super, super sensitive.
Super!
Zach Lowe has even said that. Like,
small-town team.
Zach Lowe doesn't criticize anybody, but he's mentioned that, like, it's you say one little very thing, weird. And they come after you. Not just Russell Westbrook, but the whole organization.
Yes. We do have a follow-up because there's another interaction between the two of them a little bit later. This is, I guess, after game four. And I guess Russell Westbrook went a little bit further than he had in the previous question.
You guys did a great job on Lillard in the first half. He didn't score until the last 75 seconds of the half. Were you pleased with the defense you played on him, and how did it change when he got going in the third quarter?
It's a good question. Not sure.
That's a good question. Not sure.
I think that is a perfectly valid question. These guys are
they're not above us. Like that's why basketball players are always going to be at the bottom of the likability power rankings for the most part, because the ones that are at the very top, whether it's LeBron James or it's Russell Westbrook, have this air of superiority over everyone that they interact with. And I can understand how it comes to that point when you are a basketball player and there's so much pressure on your shoulders and you're constantly being criticized for things over and over and over again. But we've gotten to the point where not only do these guys think that they're above answering a simple question about the sport that they play, but they're also delving into being philosophers and other stupid crap off the court, which you look at and you're like, calm down, Kyrie Irving. The earth is round.
I think Westbrook, though, is especially unique in the way that he handles it. Like, he is especially dismissive, not just of Barry Trammell, the Oklahoman, but other people as well.
I'm reading something from Grantland. Remember Grantland?
I do.
Because they actually wrote a piece a while back about exactly why Russell Westbrook hates Barry Trammell. And it says, but Westbrook can also be unnecessarily harsh on reporters. One night a game ran late. This guy from the Oklahoman was up against the deadline. He brought his laptop into the locker room to move quotes directly from the player's lips to his copy. Mayberry sat in a chair. Westbrook saw him and told him the chairs were for players only. Mayberry got up, but then a funny thing happened. Backup point guard Reggie Jackson took his chair, wheeled it across the locker room, and offered it to Mayberry. And then there have been a lot of interactions like
that. And Jackson was traded to the Pistons
because of that.
Yeah, they got rid of, like, that was
the
Jackson
reason. That anecdote.
Siding with a hated media member, because apparently the guy just wanted to sit down and pound out an article. Russell Westbrook didn't even want the guy to actually sit on the chair.
That's one of my favorites.
That's an extreme. That's
one of my favorite stories I've read about this whole Oklahoma City situation. That is absolutely just beyond me. But so Westbrook ultimately at the end of the day will, as I'm repeating myself basically, at the end of the day, the Thunder will be eliminated for the, you know, for the third straight year in the first round since losing Kevin Durant.
Can I tell you one more story about Russell Westbrook and the way he treats the media?
Sure.
They were just standing around after this game. After a few minutes, Westbrook emerged from the showers in a towel. He began to get dressed. The mostly male group looked at the ceiling, then down at the carpet. They tried to look at anything but the famous partially naked athlete before them. Westbrook was half-dressed now. He took a step towards the reporters. A few of us jumped to the side. Nah, you ain't got to get out of the way. Foot cramp. He stretched his leg there while he was buck naked in front of everybody. This is a power move by one I always respected by athletes. The buck naked power move of, like, just being like, yep, I'm naked. I'm going to stand here with my foot up on a chair. Deal with it. And just usually flopping their rather generous manhood in front of all these dudes who definitely aren't strapping like this dude is. That's always been one of my favorites. Now it depends. Obviously, if there's a woman present, that's not acceptable. But if it's a bunch of dudes, yeah, just go ahead and alpha male them.